There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along, live local talk over the next couple of hours. And watching the forecast here. We're actually not watching the forecast. We heard a forecast from Dr. Bill Williams. Now we're watching radar and from board news of possible severe weather heading our way. We're going to get thunderstorms. We're going to get that rain. Now will be severe in nature. Right now, it's still a question. Back to our north and back to our west, there have been some pretty heavy-duty rain showers, and that's kind of what we're looking at timing-wise for late tonight into the wee hours of tomorrow morning, and then clearing it a lot colder by this time tomorrow. We'll get more from Dr. Bill coming up around 12:35. Get more on our forecast. So that's coming your way this hour. Also, it's Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, on the way with us in just a second. I do want to throw a couple things into the mix before we even get started. Number one, before somebody else tells you this story, I'm just going to give you my take quickly. People talking today, former President Obama is quoted in saying that women are indisputably better leaders than men. Okay? Now, he's quoted, we'll get to this in a little bit, but he says women are better leaders than men. Now, we can make an argument that former President Obama is correct, but I have my idea. Well, later on in the show, I'll tell you why I think he's saying that. Why I think the former president of these United States, Barack Obama, is coming out and saying that women are indisputably, he's not even talking about being, you know, different people, different individuals. You know, women are better leaders than men. I'll tell you why he says that coming up in just a little bit. All right, phone number, text line open for you at 343-0106. And a reminder, too, that our Alabamian of the Year 2019 first round voting is up. Today's list. Now, remember, here's how it works. You're going to go through and you're going to vote each day, and we're going to winnow down the list. And by the end of the month, we will select the Alabamian of the Year. Now, we do this each year. Y'all nominate the people, places, things, events, groups, all that. They go onto the list. Then we put them in brackets. You vote, and then you vote it the whole way through to the end. So right now, first round voting, the top two vote getters move into the second round. So your first round bracket, one of five, anti-toll movement, lottery, gas tax, and abortion bill. Okay, so vote right now, front page of fmtalk1065.com, and lottery right now with 42%, anti-toll movement 38%, abortion bill 12%, and the gas tax 8%. Which, by the way, this is a good question for Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. So in our first round of our Alabamian of the Year, or issues, I'm surprised that gas tax is the least voted for in this list. Out of what people think is important in 2019, gas tax is the fourth of four here, Todd.
Yeah, I mean, that is interesting. But when you think about it, though, it was, a lot of sound and fury as it was being discussed and actually passed, but once it was done, it was done. And thankfully, gas prices themselves have kind of stayed steady, gone down a little bit in some places. And so the impact really hasn't been there. You know, the first round came in September. And, I mean, I didn't really notice it in my pocketbook. I don't think others did either. But it has been refreshing to see a lot of these orange cones go up. I've noticed a few roads in up here, and I know there are some in North Alabama, maybe down there too. So
now we're not allowed surprised. To have. No, we're not allowed to have any of that down here. We're all punished down here.
Well, what did you say the bridge? What bridge had to be?
Yeah, so bridge was number one. So this is this is our first round of voting here, and we'll call this kind of our state or Goat Hill stories is the first round, and we get into sports figures and people and all that later, but. Choices were anti-toll movement, lottery, gas tax, abortion bill. Anti-toll movement, 38%. Lottery, 42%. Abortion bill, 12%. Gas tax, 8%. So the biggest is the lottery right now. And I think that's probably going to change in the voting as the day goes on. But right now, lottery leading the anti-toll movement in our list of things that most influence the news cycle in 2019 in Alabama. So where would you vote? Where would your vote be?
Well, I mean, I would have to say the toll bridge, and not just because, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was new, and it actually happened that one time. Look, lottery's been around forever, right? The lottery issue's been around for as long as, for 20 years at least. And, you know, the gas tax, again, they had been debating that for years. But with the toll bridge, I mean, the fact that it was proposed, opposition grew, opposition won, and they eventually revoked the project, you know, and who knows what's going to happen next. That was a big deal. That doesn't happen every day. That doesn't happen every year.
Right.
That a movement kind of emerges to say, hey, no, we don't like this plan, and actually wins the day. So, yeah, I think that's a huge story, not just in Mobile, but around the state.
Well, we will we'll let you know when this round gets done, which two move on to the next tier. And maybe you can lead that on a headline when people get their email for Alabama Daily News. Here's what unscientific poll says over at fmtalk1065.com. All right, I want to pick your brain. We're going to go back to state issues. But first, what's happening in Washington with this articles of impeachment vote? I mean, it's no surprise that, I mean, the Democrats have the vote. Why wait till Wednesday?
Well, that's probably when everybody's going to be in town, right?
So, I mean, It could be that simple, right?
Well, they kept members of Congress late Friday. Remember, the Judiciary Committee, they were supposed to vote Thursday night, and they ended up voting Friday. It made everybody mad. Of course, the rest of Congress was probably gone, but... so the way it generally works is folks will come up on Tuesday, and maybe not everybody's there. And in this situation, you have to vote on the rule, right? That comes first, and that takes two or three votes, and then the actual bill would either come on Wednesday or Thursday. So that's not actually that's pretty typical as far as process goes in the House. And you certainly want a situation where everybody is in town. Nobody has. Not yet. Made it to Washington, and nobody has already left.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because of the vote issue here. And this was like last week when Speaker Pelosi said that she was quoted, you know, we're not whipping the votes or we're not. I said, come on, because, you know, they have the votes. The Democrats in the House have the votes to move these articles of impeachment out. But I got a feeling here, and you are so much more savvy in this than I, that the fewer Democrats that defect, the more that are on for this vote, the better it seems for Speaker Pelosi.
Oh, absolutely. Of course they're whipping this vote. And
say that when she said she wouldn't whip the vote?
I did. Well, really? Yeah, saying, hey, you know, we're not counting and all this.
My foot.
Okay. Maybe she isn't, but that's not her job. It's the whip. So, and you nailed it. You nailed it, Sean. It's because, yes, there are certain Democrats in swing districts that really could take a hit if they vote to impeach the president. So some of them are in a really tough position. So you better believe that House leadership right now is turning the screws on these Democrats, saying, you got to be with us. You know, you got to vote with us. And because let's say it's, you know, one or two Democrats that votes against impeachments. That's actually pretty bad, but it's not nearly as bad as five or six.
Right.
Because we know no Republicans are going to vote for it. I don't think, at least. You may have one or two yahoos. I'm just saying, but we know that, some Democrats are on the fence about it. So yeah, the more that stack up saying, hey, I don't approve of impeachment. Remember, they wanted this to be a bipartisan thing. They said from the beginning, Pelosi said, this has to be bipartisan for it to really work.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be the opposite.
Right.
It's going to be a bipartisan, you know, not to impeach. So that's a real problem for Democrats.
Yeah. So it might live up to the definition of being bipartisan, but not in the way that Speaker Pelosi had thought in this. But right now, there's no question they've got the votes to move the articles out. But, I mean, what number are you at, 133? Or where are you if you're Pelosi? Then you go, yeah, I feel good in my convictions here. You know, I feel like the history will hold me out to have made the right decision.
That's a really good question. I mean, you know, the old saying in Washington is the only number that matters is 218.
Yeah.
You need 218 to pass a bill, and in this case, to impeach the president. And that's obviously the number they're looking for. They'll have that. They'll probably have upwards of 230, 235, something like that. I don't think it's necessarily how many yes votes they have. I think it's maybe how many no votes they have. If it's 7 or 8 Democrats that vote against impeachment, that is a big egg on the face. But look, you know, it's already going to happen. It's a foregone conclusion. Everybody knows they're going to impeach the president. I predict that the Democrats will do a pretty good job of twisting the screws on some of these fence sitters to get them to vote for it. You know, there's lots of goodies they can hand out and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't predict it'll be a whole lot of Democrats voting against it. It could be, but I predict that the Pelosi and company will do a pretty good job of, you know, being very, you know, persuasive for some of these guys that might be on the fence.
Yeah, same way Don Corleone was persuasive. Hey, coming right back. More with Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Talking about how to get that email in your inbox now more than ever. You want that information as you get your day started. He'll tell you how to do that. Also, we'll get into some state politics, but I do want to stick around with the discussion from Washington, because Todd's spending time in Washington as well. Talk about what this might look like in the Senate. We do that when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1222 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Talking with Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. That you yourself can get the email in your inbox each weekday morning and once on the weekend by doing what? What are they going to do, Todd?
Sean, it's really easy, and now is a great time to subscribe because we've got the legislative session coming up. We've got the campaigns heating up with the March primary coming. So right now is the perfect time to sign up for Alabama Daily News, and it's free. All you got to do is go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe, put your name and your email in, and you'll be on the list. You'll get an email from me each morning. I detail the top of the news, very digestible bites about what you need to know. You can read more if you want, but we try to make it really reader-friendly and user-friendly. ALDailyNews.com. Sign up. We'd be glad to have you on the list.
Yeah, it's good stuff, y'all. I read it every morning when it hits my inbox. I want to talk about more of the state, federal news, but I do want to stick with this impeachment discussion for a second. So we talk about the House portion of this. Now let's talk about what happens. This goes to the Senate, and you're hearing Schumer and McConnell back and forth right now, really more Schumer complaining about what he thinks this is going to be in the Senate. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, you know, Chuck Schumer basically got out in front. You know, he's in the minority. Democrats in the minority in the Senate. The roles are reversed as far as the House and the Senate. So Chuck Schumer went ahead and got out front making certain demands, saying, hey, we need to have the Senate trial proceed in a certain way. We need to have witnesses, including he really wants Mick Mulvaney to be a witness. He really wants John Bolton to be a witness. I don't think those are by accident at all. Number one, right. We know that Mick Mulvaney is known for sticking his foot in his mouth.
Yes.
He's done so many times at the White House podium. And we know that John Bolton kind of, he parted ways with the White House. He parted ways with the president, especially over national security. And so that, and foreign policy. And so those witnesses, I think, are not an accident as far as calling them. We don't know whether this Senate trial will even have witnesses. We don't know exactly how it's going to be structured. You know, they can pull as much as they want from the Clinton impeachment and all that. But what this was today was Chuck Schumer just getting out ahead of it, saying, okay, we should have this, and then whatever proceeds from there, that's at least the starting point, right? So if Mitch McConnell says, no, we're not going to have any witnesses, we're just going to dismiss this stuff, then he kind of looks like the bad guy, right, that he doesn't want to be transparent. So it was a shrewd move from Schumer. But what they'll talk, they're going to come to terms on some kind of trial and how it'll proceed, but I wouldn't expect it to really come together until the first of the year.
Hey, okay, I want to back up for a second, though. Just one sidebar. The John Bolton thing always, I mean, when President Trump nominated Bolton, I was taken aback, and people listen to the show all the time. Remember, I went on for, you know, weeks about this, and nobody seemed to pay much attention. I said, but Bolton is contrary to the to planks of President Trump's or then candidate Trump's platform, right, that he ran on. He was talking about, I mean, John Bolton is the neocon's neocon, and yeah. President Trump ran on a very non-anti-neocon foreign policy, which he is showing today. We're talking about the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan. We see what happened, you know, in northern Syria there. So I never did understand that. I didn't understand why he brought Bolton in, and if Bolton gets called, it seemed like a setup from word go, but maybe I'm missing some of the three-dimensional chess.
Well, look, I think if we're all being honest, you know, the biggest weaknesses of Trump's presidency has been some of his staff hires, even from the very beginning. And maybe it was, you know, just kind of placing trust in the wrong folks. He's not a Washington being. He's tried to kind of go outside the box and hire different folks, but yes, some of the folks that he placed trust in really have let him down. Now, look.
But you should know better. Come on, man. You know, don't tell me he's new to
one. I'm not giving him a pass. I'm not
John Bolton. It's John Bolton. Really?
I'm not giving Trump a pass. I'm blaming him. You know, that's the job number one. You've got to surround yourself with people that are going to make you successful. And Trump, well, he's had some great hires, but a lot of the staff that he's put around him have really disappointed him. You look at people like Mulvaney and Giuliani, who have just caused more and more trouble. But here's what I'll say about John Bolton. So with Mulvaney, what they want is, remember that Mulvaney went to the White House podium and said,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course it was a quid pro quo.
We do that all the time. Yeah.
Get used to it. This is how it works.
Yep.
So that's why they want him as a witness, right? That's pretty easy. On John Bolton, John Bolton clearly believes that we have been making the wrong moves as far as Russia and Ukraine. And so they want him to bolster the case that whatever happened was not in the nation's interest, that went against our national security interest. So that's a 1-2 punch. That's exactly why they want those. It's pretty, I mean, that's just me
right,
reading between the lines. But we don't know. We don't know if they're going to get them, but it's kind of, I mean, look, Chuck Schumer's been around here for a long time. He knows what he's doing. So yeah, him saying, yeah, give me Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton. Mm-hmm. I think everybody kind of gets where he's going.
Let's talk about the other side of that coin. Schumer on one side of it, but you want to talk about been there for a while and savvy in the Senate, that is McConnell. I mean, he's no fool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I remember back in the day just a few years ago, really, when some of the Tea Party and everything would hate on McConnell. Like, he uh-huh. was some kind of, you know, squish and just, you know, we can't stand McConnell. Man, he has held things together in that upper chamber for years. He is largely responsible for all the success that the Trump administration has been having with appointing these judges. McConnell knows his stuff. He knows what he's doing. And so, yeah, when it comes to this impeachment stuff, I would, if you're a Republican, I would not worry too much knowing that Mitch McConnell is running the show.
All right. One last question here before we run the news break. Because on the text line, somebody asking, what is Doug Jones' stand on the impeachment? And I asked Senator Jones a few weeks ago about that. And he said, well, there's not, you know, I haven't gotten all the information out there. I'm not going to make that decision yet. Looking, I said, well, what if it, if it comes to you, would you vote to remove? He said, well, I don't have enough information. I have him on the show this week. I'm going to ask that again. I wonder when he's going to be having to answer that. Is it going to be on the day he votes?
Well, yeah, probably. I would, that's typically how they do it. Even if it was a yes or a no, I mean, yeah, because if you telegraph your vote beforehand, then you've got tons of people calling you and bugging you and telling you, you're a bad person, all that kind of stuff. I'm fascinated by that, though. I really am, because publicly, in a lot of his press releases and stuff like that, he really tries to position himself as a middle of the road guy.
Mm-hmm.
But look. He voted against Kavanaugh, probably the most consequential vote of his Senate tenure. He voted against the partial birth or the 20-week abortion ban. Those two votes really, go against a lot of what conservatives believe. And so those are big deals, and it wouldn't have been that hard to vote the other way. So I don't know. I'm fascinated by how he might vote. But again, it would be a big problem for Democrats if he voted no.
All right, coming right back, we'll find out more about those that would like to replace Senator Jones. Got some polling data out. Todd's got it for us next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 74 now at the FM Talk 106.5 studios, right close to Airport and 65. Could be a record setter today for high temp, and then by tomorrow, cold transition tonight. Could be some severe weather. Keeping our eyes on it. Continuing our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and talks from Washington. But now we're also talking what goes on in the Senate race here, and the person who wants to replace, the people that want to replace Doug Jones at the austere body representing the state of Alabama. There we go. Now we're down to what? We got seven? How many do we have left in this Republican primary?
Yeah, technically seven, but I think we're all kind of looking at four.
Yes.
Right.
What four would those be, Todd?
Well, that'd be, Jeff Sessions, Tommy Tuberville, Bradley Byrne, and Roy Moore.
And you've got a slew of information, and people can check out when they go to aldailynews.com or get your email. There's another part of the website for those of us that are super wonks here on information. You bring it, man, as you bring some more polling data. You have more polling data that showed up today in this update, Inside Alabama Politics, than I've seen in this entire cycle.
Well, that's what we try to do. And so, yeah, there's a premium subscription. Alabama Daily News is free, but as like most websites, like your Rivals or Politico Pro, there's a premium service. And that's what, like you said, the nerds, the truly lost nerds in the politics, we get into that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, there are actually five polls that we have on Inside Alabama Politics today. And I just went back all the way to June to track, okay, where were we in June before Sessions was even really seriously talked about as a, really going to run, all the way, through October into November, and now finally here in December as far as tracking the different polls. And it's really interesting because what you've seen is all the candidates other than Sessions saying basically the same. For Tuberville, he's been at 21%, 23%, 21%, and 21%. That's pretty even.
Yep.
And that goes all the way back to June. For Bradley Byrne, it's 13, 11, 17, 14, right? That's within 3 points of each other. It's all very even. Even Roy Moore, 9%, 11%, 10%, 7%. So all the what we look for in polling are these trends that, because every poll can be a little off. You can poke holes in it. But when you see, the same results over a trend, you tend to think, okay, you're getting toward the right data. So the point I'm making is that the big number, Jeff Sessions' number, has climbed every time. He's gone from 29 to 31 to 36 to now at 44. Now that 44%, that was his own internal number. That should be very clear. It's his own internal poll. But I saw the poll, you know, guts. I have no reason to doubt it. Everybody has basically stayed the same, but Jeff Sessions has continually climbed ever since June to December in this primary poll, which shows me he's the one that's really got a lot of momentum.
Okay, so the momentum two places, of course, going for votes, and maybe not that he needs it, but that maybe not that he needs the money, but maybe the money's drying up for other contenders. Do you think there's an issue for Tuberville?
Well, Tuberville's got a lot of personal money, right? He's already put in, I think, close to $1 million of his own. He's probably got plenty to give if he really wants to do that as well. Bradley Byrne also has plenty of money, maybe not personal, but he's raised so much money. I think they've got something like $2.5 million in the bank. Now, look, that'll probably get them through the primary. We're only 2.5 months away from the primary. 79 days, Sean, from March 3rd. So maybe they don't have to raise that much, but in the circumstance, like say if you're Bradley Byrne, you got to do two jobs now. You got to, number one, go and get your own name ID up in places like Huntsville and Birmingham, right? He's got to get well known up there. If people knew Bradley Byrne in Huntsville and Birmingham like they do in Mobile, he would be polling a lot better in this race, maybe even in the lead. But nobody knows him, right? They don't know him very well. So he's got to spend a lot of money getting his name ID up there. But the second job is attacking the other guys. He's got to get into the primary runoff. That means going after a Tommy Tuberville or a Jeff Sessions. Now, maybe there'll be a super PAC that can help him do that, or some outside groups that can maybe take some of that burden. But when you have to do two jobs with TV and radio advertising, it becomes a lot more expensive.
So that, yeah, he's got those both to do. Will he just overcome Tuberville, or will Tuberville stumble? I don't know. There's a pretty big spread in all those polls. I mean, there's a lot would have to change.
I think so. And look, I've said all along, and I've got no, you know, dog in this hunt, but I've said all along that I find Tuberville's numbers to be the softest of all, because sure, he's well known, and he's well liked, but he's well known and well liked because of his coaching career, not because of, you know, his political bona fides and things like that. And so if something were to come out, if there were some attacks and things like that, then I could see those numbers being a little softer, just because he's not a known commodity as far as a politician. I could be completely wrong with that, because he's done very well politically. When Jeff Sessions, you know, when I see his number, I know that that's a pretty rock solid number, because people have known him as a senator for 20 years. So there's a big difference there. That's why I'm saying, like, if you're Bradley Byrne, to me, it's a lot easier to go after Tuberville, because he's got a softer underbelly than Jeff Sessions, who's, you know, pretty much rock ribbed.
All right. Well, okay. The next part of this then is question: will we have a runoff? And then beyond that, Doug Jones. Is he just waiting around to lose, or is he gonna fight? What kind of money does he have to use to fight?
Well, look, I've said from the very beginning that I thought a runoff is likely. I still think smart money is probably on the runoff. I mean, look, I'm seeing Jeff Sessions at 44%. That's 6 points away from having the primary without a runoff. Maybe he can do it. I mean, maybe he can. And if he does that, what a feat. What a feat. But we don't know. We don't know if there are some attack ads coming and stuff like that. So I'd still lean toward a primary runoff. That said, I would not want to be in a runoff with Jeff Sessions. As far as Doug Jones, look, he has really tried to position himself as a moderate, as a guy that's in the middle, you know, not too far leaning left. But the truth is, especially in a year like this, with President Trump on the ballot, this is about teams. This comes down to teams, Republicans versus Democrats, especially in the U.S. Senate. People are voting for those Supreme Court justices. And he's already demonstrated, he already voted against one. He voted against Kavanaugh. So look, I'm sure that Doug Jones is going to have a ton of money. I'm sure he's going to run a fantastic campaign that is poll tested and just really run well. But at the end of the day, I just don't see them overcoming the swell of Alabama Republicans who want that seat back because of Supreme Court justices, because of judges, and to hopefully, for their part, maintain that Senate majority.
Would you have just a minute left here, but I can't finish up without at least letting you tease one of the items up inside Alabama that was up in on this edition of Inside Alabama Politics, discussion of maybe Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh leaving as head of the Senate. What's the story?
Well, yeah, you know, Del Marsh has been the president pro tem of the Senate since 2010, right? Since Republicans took over all that time. He's done an incredible job. But he's always said that he'd like to step aside so somebody else could come. That may not happen. He's changed his mind several times. But look, that leaves a huge void. So who becomes pro tem, who becomes majority leader is, you know, really up in the air. And so there are some younger guys, including Clay Schofield from up in Gunnersville. Mm-hmm. I think he's 35, 36 years old. He could be the majority leader in the Alabama State Senate. What an interesting thing there. So there's a lot of palace intrigue happening in the State House right now.
And we'll be talking more about that as we move closer to session. Talking about ticking down to the primary. How about ticking down towards they get started up on Goat Hill? Not long.
That's right. That's right. February 4th. It's coming right up.
That's why y'all going to be following the daily updates from Todd and the crew at Alabama Daily News. Once again, tell them how to do it.
It's really easy. Just aldailynews.com. Click subscribe, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list.
Thank you, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, Sean. Be good.
You too. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Want to run through a couple more things out of Montgomery here before we finish up the hour, get to the former President Obama saying, undisputedly, that women make better leaders than men. And I have a theory about that. We'll get to it in just a second. So a little more about kind of the palace intrigue, as Todd called it, for this coming session in Montgomery. Remember, they just had their big bicentennial celebration. Well, we all did. All Alabama did. But the politicos were up there. Even if the people weren't up there, the citizens didn't stop what they were doing and go to the event. The politicos had a lot of parties and meetings and all that going up there. So one that Todd talked about is this speculation that Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh might be relinquishing responsibilities of being boss at the Senate. Then you got those names. Who would be next? You know, you look at Greg Reed. You look at Clyde Chambliss, Clay Schofield, who he was talking about. Who moves into that position? I think that'll be pretty interesting. And Schofield, I think Todd had talked about this, is close to Governor Ivey. So that, because I think Governor Ivey is going to have a few problems here with some members of the legislature in this session. Now, same party, but remember the gas tax was an issue for them, and then after the I-10 Mobile River Bridge toll question, it may behoove the governor to have somebody running the Senate that is definitely on her side. So we'll see where that goes. Also, you've got the Supreme Court race going on, and he announced here, remember, it's been a month and a half ago or something, State Senator Cam Ward, who has been on the show talking about prison reform a bunch with us over the years. He's from the Alabaster area. He's up around Birmingham. But State Senator Cam Ward is challenging Supreme Court Justice Greg Shaw in the Republican primary. And this is one thing that Todd put out in an email here. He said, the dynamics of that race are not yet completely clear, but one thing for certain, the association endorsements are not going to flood all towards Ward, nor will they accede to Shaw's incumbency. Of the big mules, right? We've talked about the mules before. Big mules, most of them paid for the... By the way, did you see that? The private money, the company money that went to pay for the Alabama Bicentennial Celebration. Remember what happened when everybody was all excited. Former Governor Bentley had all these people on staff that were not paid by we the taxpayers, and everybody said, "Oh, that's great." And I said, "Watch it." And it turned out that not a good choice. All right. So out of the big mules who have endorsed so far, the score is 1-1-1, meaning one for Ward, one for Shaw, and one no decision. So you've got State Senator Cam Ward challenging Greg Shaw. They're both looking for support, obviously money and votes and all that. Alabama Retail Association got out early and gave Ward the nod. Retail carries a big stick and a bigger purse when it comes to court races, and this was rightly seen as a massive coup by Ward. What it does not appear to have done is to open the floodgates. In other words, here comes a retail association, but there's not anybody on their coattails. And then last week, the BCA, the Business Council of Alabama, got the Alabama political world's attention by announcing it would stick with Shaw, the incumbent. This was surprising to some, but they said, you don't dump the one guy, the incumbent, over the new challenger. Maybe stick with what you got. But it's going to be interesting now to see if any of the other mules side, because you have two big ones. You basically have a one-in-one, right? Alabama Retail Association, big deal. They're backing Board. Business Council of Alabama backing Shaw. And they go on to say here in Todd's email, even bigger in terms of cultural significance and galvanizing their statewide membership, the Alabama Farmers Federation has chosen not to endorse for now. So word is that Shaw didn't show up at a Farm PAC meeting. So now if he wants to regain their support, he needs to put it together county by county, something Ward is already trying to do with his campaign. So that could be a big move. If, let's say, Alabama Farmers Federation does decide to go with Ward, who's challenging, that would be 2-1 for the big mules. And once again, it is not only the support of money that comes from those groups, but it's blocks of votes. I mean, it's why Tuberville pursued and got the Alabama Farmer Federation's nod in the Senate race. That's a big deal. It comes with a lot of built-in votes and support. So that's just a few things. There's a lot more going on in Montgomery before they even get started with session. Remember, that's early February, but they're working right now. The sausage is being made right now. It may not be voted on or discussed in the public until they get started with regular session, but no doubt it's going on right now. All right, I mentioned the story about President Trump, former President Obama, and his discussion of women being the undisputed better leaders. Okay, so this is came out yesterday. It says, former President Barack Obama, this is from Axios, former President Barack Obama said he believes living standards and economic outcomes would improve if women led every country in the world. This is from, a BBC article. Said, speaking at a private leadership event in Singapore, Obama said currently he does not plan on getting back into the political leadership because he believes in leaders stepping aside. Quote, if you look at the world and look at the problems, it's usually old people, usually old men, not getting out of the way, end quote. He says, now women, I want you to know, you are not perfect, but what I can say pretty indisputably is you are better than us, meaning men, end quote. What I would say, I'm absolutely confident that for 2 years, if every nation on earth was run by women, you would see a significant improvement across the board on just about everything, living standards and outcomes. Former President Obama went on to say, it's important for political leaders to try to remind themselves that you're there to do a job, but you are not there for life. You are not there in order to prop up your own sense of self-importance or your own power, end quote. Now, what's getting the headlines there is saying that he's confident that if for 2 years every nation on earth was run by women, you would see a significant improvement across the board on just about everything, living standards and outcomes. Now, the issue here is, this is back to, groupthink politics. There's probably many fantastic leaders out there of all races, of both sexes, of... Like I said, I have this idea of bringing the burqa here. You can quote me on that. I want to bring a burqa into the United States, but I only want to use it during the political season. So you can't see the the sex or the race or anything of the people, and then you just hear their ideas. They even have like a, they don't have a name, they have a number. It's like candidate one, candidate two, three, and four. Decide who's best, and then at the end you have a big reveal. But I have a belief here that what's happening here, and not saying there's not plenty of room for people who have not been, you know, given a chance before in leadership roles. But for a blanket statement, like former President Obama said about women, if women ran every nation on earth, everything would be better, living standards and outcomes and all that. I think it's this. I think it's probably the twins are gone, right? The girls are gone, right? Their kids are gone from the house, and they must be. I think they're old enough. And then Michelle Obama's got her book and done whatever. I think he's jockeying for a little attention. Maybe he's been put on the couch. Maybe he's somehow gotten in trouble with Michelle Obama. Maybe he's trying to get himself back in the bedroom. I don't know. I think there's some move here. I think he says this at this conference in Singapore so he can say, hey, Michelle, you see what I said today? See all the stories about that? So do I get to get back in the bed now or what? That's just my take on it. It's probably not factual at all. What do you think? If we all, women ran all countries on earth for the next 2 years, are we better? Coming right back.